Okay, I had to let it go just a little bit this week. I know. I should have stopped. I should have cut it off before that. But, hey, I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports for Wednesday, July 28th, 2021. On this, what would be my Father in Heaven's 95th birthday. Happy birthday in heaven, Dad. 95. And, of course, that is Peak Hour by the Moody Blues. Kind of gives me the feeling that I'm on a BBC network, kind of classy, although I know I'm not. But, hey, what the heck. Other shows, of course, on the network, on Global Patriot Radio, Mondays, Vito and Al with the Vito Esposito Show featuring Big Al. Tuesdays, Eric the Kaffir with Radio Free Kaffiristan. Thursdays, the deplorable Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. And then Fridays, Conservative Casual Friday with Andrew Herod. And then Saturday nights, it goes late, 10 p.m. to midnight. Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie with Revealing the Truth About Islam. Eric is back on Sunday with Real Interfaith Dialogue. And then, of course, here every Wednesday, 5:30 or thereabouts, Hank Jones Poly Sports with your host, myself, Hank Jones. On Global Patriot Radio, here on blogtalkradio.com. Yes, .com. Still .coms out there. Hey, if you want to contact us, you can, you can email me. You can always email me, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Go to Twitter, Sports, or just look for Hank Jones Poly Sports. Facebook, same thing. Go to Facebook and just type in Hank Jones Poly Sports in the search bar. Because there's no other. There's no other Hank Jones. The best way, of course, if you want to talk, is to call 319-527-6706. Again, that's 319-527-6706. You can listen in, or if you want to talk, hit the 1. I get the little icon that says, someone wants to talk to you. We are here at Electric Hankland Studios. Mrs. Hank is over in Hank Haven. The little Aussie is here, adorable as always. And let's get right to our recent obituaries. Last week, Greg Knapp was a New York Jets assistant coach. He was hired back in January of this year. He passed away at age 58, several days after being struck while riding his bicycle. Very unfortunate. He had a pretty good college career as a quarterback at Sacramento State. Though he never made it to a full roster in the NFL, he did make a practice squad a couple times. So you can't, you know, he just didn't make the full roster. He had a success as both a college coach and an NFL assistant coach. He was actually an offensive coordinator for a while. As a member of the Denver Broncos coaching staff, he won a Super Bowl ring during the 2016-2017 season, survived by a wife and three daughters. Tragic. Just, you know, about to get into the NFL season, start a new job. And I lived out in California, a place called Danville. I actually know some people from there, actually. Last Friday, we saw the passing of bodybuilder and actor Mike Mitchell. He was 65. Few details were released, but he did have noted appearances in the films Braveheart and Gladiator, I imagine for his bodybuilding physique, not for his acting chops, but sad to hear. And then last Saturday, we lost rabbi-turned-comedian Jackie Mason, at the age of 93. Jackie Mason was an outspoken supporter of Israeli security. He was also a very funny guy. He was an admirer of Rabbi Meir Kahana. Now, a lot of people will say, Rabbi Meir Kahana was... Well, that's if you listen to mainstream media, that's the portrayal. But Rabbi Meir Kahana was, some said Kahani, was vociferously pro-security for the country and state of Israel. And Jackie Mason supported that. He also... became a comedian, then he was an actor for a while, did some acting. He appeared in The Jerk, Steve Martin's breakout movie. And then, yeah, he was in Caddyshack, too. And we're gonna cut him slack because he then went on to an award-winning performance as Rabbi Hyman Krestovsky on The Simpsons, the father of beloved character Herschel Krestovsky, better known to us all as Krusty the Clown.
Hey, kids!
Yeah, Krusty. but he played Krusty's dad. So that was so I give him a pass for Caddyshack 2 for being in The Simpsons. After the Oslo Peace Agreement, he founded One Jerusalem in 2001. The goal was to keep a united Jerusalem as the undivided capital of Israel. When he was speaking about deporting Palestinians from Israel, he told an interview, he was often asked, but where will they go? And his answer was, if they don't care who they kill, why should we care where they go? Very astute comment, probably over the heads of a lot of people, but think about it. He was also a supporter of Donald Trump, so you can imagine how he was treated by a lot of folks. Still, he was remembered by comedians and actors across the political spectrum as one of the best and funniest there was. So, yeah, R.I.P. Reb Krestovsky, a.k.a. Jackie Mason. T. Bodie and Indy Hawk KB are in the house. T. Bodie's doing double duty, being on the in the chat room and on the phone. Welcome him back. He is... He was in last week, but he'd been under the weather a bit, but it sounds like he's making a turn for the better. I've still got to watch out for some stuff, make sure he does what they tell him, but good to see him back and to see that he appears to be on the mend, as they say. Last Saturday, the world was rid of Rodney Alcala. He was a noted serial killer. He often tortured his victims in a way I shouldn't mention, but I'll tell you because it's too sick not to, to understand why I say the world is rid of this guy. He would, particularly kids, he would almost strangle them to the point and then let up and let them revive and do it all over again. They say he did it as many as 7 times to one victim. And then kill him. To give you an idea of how creepy this dude was, this guy back in 1978 actually got on The Dating Game, the old dating game show. He actually won the contest, and then the woman refused to go out on a date with him when she sat down and talked to him. She said he was too creepy. And yeah, 77 years on this earth was way too long for this guy. Monday we saw the passing of two musical types, Jordy Jordison of Slipknot and the Murder Dolls and Sinsanium. And Mike Howe of Metal Church and Heretic. Jordison was 46, Howe was 55. I don't really know much about either, and I'm not going to go up and Google it and Wikipedia it and all that because I don't really care. Because today we actually lost a bona fide, iconic, real musician with the passing of ZZ Top's Dusty Hill at the age of 72. Now, no cause given yet. But apparently he died in his sleep. He was the bass player for the band. He was bassist. He also did their keyboarder, and he was their secondary lead vocalist since they formed. They formed in 1969 in Houston. Hits ranging from LaGrange to Tush, I Thank You to Cheap Sunglasses, Tube Snake Boogie to Pearl Necklace. I know, sounds gross, but that was their original appeal. And then from the mid to late 80s, he did a series of videos on MTV. It would feature the band sort of helping out local nerds to get the hot girls. Usually the hot girl wasn't hot. She was a local girl. And then some Playboy Playmates would be brought in to the video to help her turn her hot. And the local nerd would get a little hotter. And then instead of turning away to the hot crowd, they would stay with each other, stay true to each other. The two nerds that always loved each other. Those videos were Give Me All Your Lovin', Sharp Dressed Man, and Legs. What they did, they utilized unheard of or up-and-coming actors, and then they brought in, as I said, the Playboy Playmates, who, of course, weren't counted on for their acting chops. But together, with the hard-driving, enjoyable tunes, the videos kind of elevated them on the video and musical scene. It gave the Playboy Playmates legit employment without having to take off their clothes, and it brought ZZ Top some mainstream popularity, which was well deserved. I mean, they were excellent musicians and an excellent band, but it doesn't mean too often people say, oh, they sell out. They didn't sell out at all. They didn't change their style or their format. They were still a hard, blues-driven rock band. And very deservingly, were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2004. So herewith, I pay some tribute to Dusty Hill. We'll be right back. I didn't want to bring it all the way down. I just wanted to keep it in the background just to talk about. T. Bodie is mentioning in the chat room. T. Bodie was on the show a couple of weeks ago, if you'll recall, and talked about a show in Fort Dodge, Iowa called Shellebration. And T. Bodie is very involved with that. And ZZ Top was their headliner in 2018, brought them the most tickets sold ever. Rain impacted it, but it was the most tickets sold, and they obviously had a successful enough show to bring in that many. And it was really, you know, as I said, it was a great group. It was not a, you know, wasn't bubblegum, obviously. It wasn't hip teen kids, you know. It was hard-driving, blues-influenced rock music. They were from Texas. They were on the, they played the blues circuit before that, Dusty Hill did, with his brother. And then they joined, and Frank Beard, and then they joined up with Billy Gibbons when they moved from, relocated from Dallas to Houston. So, great, great group. Sad to see, you know. I mean, obviously, they could, groups like that can still tour with different members, but it's not the same. Everyone knows that. So, again, rest in peace, Dusty Hill, at the age of 72. So let's get on to some sports news. Yes, sports news first. The Olympics are underway. So far, what we have is two questionable COVID disqualifications with John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau as golfers. Others have as well, but those are the high-profile ones. And the reason I say questionable, that day that it was announced, the CDC had recalled one of the rapid response tests, COVID tests. So, yeah, that kind of makes you wonder. And John Rahm had it back. Remember, John Rahm back in April or May had been leading the Colonial or the Memorial after three rounds, had a six-stroke lead, and he got pulled off the course at the end of the round because he had tested positive. So you wonder how he got it again so soon, but we'll talk about that later with a different athlete. And we've had favored athletes losing. We've had one, some say a quitter, others say whatever, needed to quit. The U.S. women's soccer team has lost a game via shutout. They tied another game, but they move on to the next round. The U.S. men's basketball team, after having two kind of embarrassing losses in pregame tune-ups, lost their opener to France, and it really wasn't that close. And we got U.S. women's gymnast Simone Biles, I mentioned, who after a very weak week for her first vault in a team competition, withdrew for the rest of the team competition. The result being a silver medal for the U.S. women's gymnastics team. She didn't quit on her team, says, according to her sycophantic, for the good of the team. Sure, whatever makes them happy, I guess. Anyone ever see Michael Jordan quit? Magic, Bird, Carl Lewis ever quit? Edwin Moses? Did anyone ever remember Peyton Manning walking off the field because he wasn't, quote, in the right headspace, whatever the hell that means? If you want to see the definition of never give up, never, ever give up. That was the phrase made famous by the late Jim Valvano during a speech at the ESPY Awards. Google this. Google Drew Tate versus Michigan 2004 losing helmet. Now, I know he's a Hawkeye, so I'm a Hawkeye. The kid had his helmet ripped off mid-play, and before officials could blow the play dead, Tate had he ducked under the tackler. He was running out of the pocket, looking downfield for an open receiver. So, yeah, here's the U.S. medal count as of this morning. 11 golds, 11 silver, 9 bronze. We'll talk more about Simone Biles. I promise it's not a rant on her. We will talk about it later during the polysports segment. As of this morning, she's also withdrawn from the individual overall final. She had qualified in all four apparatuses, or apparati, which she, by the way, she didn't do that in Rio in 2016 where she won 5 medals. But here she is pulling out of the no. She has yet to decide whether she will compete in any of the individual events. But as Indy Hawk KB pointed out in the chat room, she took someone's spot on the team. Now, would they have won? Probably not. Anyway, I think something deeper is going on. It's been stated that she's focusing on her mental well-being. And frankly, if she's losing focus in the middle of a discipline, that's definitely a problem. I mean, what we saw happen on that vault was definitely not her. question is that the actual problem? Is she just tired? Is she that stressed? Oh, and sadly, remember I reported last week breakdancing being an Olympic sport? Not this year, folks. It will not debut until 2024. Yeah, not too much of that. But like I said, that's the ultimate breakdancing tune, Rocket by Herbie Hancock. The bombshell news in college football this past week was the revelation that Texas and Oklahoma have made overtures about joining the Southeast Conference and leaving the Big 12, choking on eight teams that have, compared to Texas and Oklahoma, very little appeal, if any, on a national TV broadcast rights scale, although that really applies to football, which is where the revenue is. Big 12 basketball scenario is slightly different, but still the eight remaining schools will be in a world of hurt without finding two very solid replacements. Well, that's not the surprise. The surprise, and it can't be true in my opinion, is that this has been going on for 6 months, yet we heard nothing about it. Sorry, I do not buy that. I don't. Anyway, it broke last Thursday, early. That day or the next day, the Big 12 leaders held a conference call. Texas and Oklahoma were not on that. So, yeah, I'd say this is happening at some point. There may be some roadblocks, both from the other SEC schools and from legislatures in both Texas and Oklahoma. And, frankly, the SEC member, Texas A&M, may be a roadblock in and of itself. It's no secret that the main reason A&M wanted out of the Big 12 years ago was because Texas wanted larger shares of TV rights, even after they got the Longhorn Network, as well as travel and other considerations. They still wanted more, and at that point, A&M basically said enough already. From the Texas legislature perspective, it has been ongoing that Texas has to be part of a package with other Texas state schools. In this case, that would mean Texas Tech. Texas Tech to the SEC, sorry. Daily News makes a good point in the chat. He said, Simone said the stress was getting to her, and she believes it will make her stronger to walk away and do what's right for her mental health. Yeah, exactly. Now, look, I'm not going to get too much into that portion of it, but I will talk about it later. But, yeah, you got to wonder. You just got to wonder. So in the case of Oklahoma in this SEC, at one point that state's legislature required any conference affiliation had to include both Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Now, from an SEC perspective, it's not going to affect Bama or Florida or Georgia or LSU so much. But that's four schools out of 14. Twitter and other places have featured posts and articles saying there could be considerable resistance from at least nine schools. Frankly, Texas doesn't bring anything that A&M doesn't already bring, really. Oklahoma brings less. Oh, sure, they have some. Both of them have some name recognition, and both could be attractive from a viewership perspective. But in a watered-down SEC, there's no guarantee that either of them will be top tier, and one could argue that they may never reach that, especially in the case of Texas. Steve Sarkisian, he's a former Bama assistant under Nick Saban. He brings a little potential excitement, but let's not forget, this guy folded when he was out at USC. He didn't get the moniker Cutty Sark by accident. Now, hopefully he's righted that ship, so to speak, but he already has enough pressure going into his first year. To think he will dominate the Big 12 is a question mark. To think that he or Texas will dominate the SEC is laughable. And to make it official, 11 of the current SEC members have to vote yes. Now, if that doesn't happen, there goes the tailspin. You think the Big 12 is on its way down now? What happens if for the next 18 months, and that's the soonest Oklahoma and Texas can get out without much more severe penalties than they would already pay? We'd have those two schools in the Big 12, one with their damn tails between their legs, and two, the other eight schools knowing they're looking to get out. As a matter of record, both Texas and Oklahoma notified the Big 12 conference that they will not exercise grant of rights contracts with the conference upon renewal of those rights in 2025. Apparently, three other schools would not commit to those either during other meetings, those being Iowa State, Kansas, and West Virginia. As of yesterday morning, both Texas and Oklahoma have officially asked for consideration to join the SEC. Technically speaking, their previous overtures violate Big 12 bylaws. Both could be suspended immediately, believe it or not, and receive no grant of rights money until their contract expiration, and they would still have to pay the $76 million each to exit. Yeah, fact. The two schools are banking, of course, on the Big 12 not doing that in order to try and coax them back, while at the same time, probably they're both counting on SEC money to pay the exit fees. Well, guess what? That SEC money, typically when a school joins a conference, they're not a full member for 2 years usually. In the case of the Big Ten, Nebraska, it was 5 years. It was 3 years. And then 3 years for Rutgers and Maryland. Penn State was a different matter because it was phased in. And, of course, there wasn't Big Ten Network at that time. There weren't, ESPN wasn't as big. There wasn't a proliferation of others. Fox Sports wasn't like it is now. Folks, this could really get interesting. Aside from the nonsensical rumors that half the Big 12 is going to the Big Ten, or half the Pac-12 is going to the Big Ten, Michigan, Ohio State are next on the SEC radar. Trust me, that will not happen in our lifetime. But the fact Texas and Oklahoma still need 11 schools to gain membership and the SEC might be fun as hell to watch. If I'm Vanderbilt, for instance, I hold a pretty top-notch trump card with the SEC. Vanderbilt all but props up the worst of the SEC schools from the standpoint of academic reputation and standing, frankly. They also command a lot of research and grant money as a private school, much like Northwestern in the Big Ten. Northwestern's a private school, but it's really a quasi-public-private partnership that those schools have in the corporate and municipal worlds. Two conferences, those conferences, Big Ten and SEC, are primarily state schools, land-grant schools in several cases. And while the Big Ten has a more solid academic reputation, the SEC has, by necessity, kicked it up a notch over the last couple decades. But, like Northwestern, Vanderbilt is perceived as being the Harvard or Yale to the rest of their conference members. And while perception isn't necessarily reality, yes, both Northwestern and Vanderbilt have a cachet that Michigan or Florida will never have. Great as those state schools are, Michigan and Florida, they're not ever going to be in the same stratosphere, perception-wise, as Northwestern and Vanderbilt. Just not ever going to happen. Now, Texas is considered another excellent school. Oklahoma, not so much. They would be basically on the level of Arkansas. Now, for those who don't remember, Arkansas joined the SEC in the early 1990s. What the SEC didn't count on is their admission literally turned both Florida State and Miami, Florida, to reject invitations to join the SEC. Both had been invited. Both were getting ready to talk it out. SEC brought in Arkansas. Florida State and Miami summarily dismissed their invitations. Arkansas was that low academically at the time. As I said, this could get very, very interesting before we see resolution. Stanford head coach David Shaw, meanwhile, he says that Alabama quarterback Bryce Young's near seven-figure name, image, likeness deals is a definite recruiting advantage for Alabama. He also said Bama coach Nick Saban, in his announcing it, was not an accident. He says this will definitely be used by Bama coaches on the recruiting trail, but as Saban noted when talking about Young's deals last week, it's going to cause locker room tensions. There's going to be jealousies and other issues, which brings up another thought that I'll talk about during the polysports segment. But anyway, here's what part of what David Shaw said during his interview. First, he said that a player like Young, who has never started a game, getting that much money, I don't believe that's fair market value. I think that's Alabama value. And then adding to that, he said, Nick Saban is way smarter than any 10 of us in this room combined. So there's no way that was just a throw-in. Obviously, that's planted to make sure people know it, and it's a great way to recruit. Yeah, it is. Welcome, Sue from New Mexico, and Big Sister to the phone lines. I see they're listening in. well as Daily News and Andy Hawk and T. Bodie in the chat. A couple Hawkeyes. Look, you know this is going to happen every week. I'm going to talk Hawkeyes, especially with college football around the corner. A couple Hawkeyes have been named to preseason watch lists. Running back Tyler Goodson, who is technically a friend of the show by virtue of his mom's appearance last year. He's up for the Doak Walker Award as the best running back and the Maxwell Award as the best player. Center Tyler Linderbaum has been named to the Outland Trophy list as best interior lineman and the Remington Trophy as best center. Both have also been named to preseason All Big Ten teams. Both were All Big Ten last year. I can't say it enough. I am jacked for a full season of college football with fans in the stands, pregame shows where we see actual tailgaters, no cardboard cutouts. Now look, Sam Britt talked about it. A couple talked about that. Look, it's still, you're still jacked when you're in Kinnick, even if it's a half, you know, a three quarter empty stadium, it's still exciting. You still get the shakes, the shivers as the team comes out on the field. But from the at home perspective, it's going to be much cooler. Hello, welcome to Sue One in the chat room. This is going to be great. I'm sorry. You're going to see real shows. I mean, it used to be a show, you know, all every, whether it's College Game Day on ESPN or Big Ten has their network, has their tailgate. They used to have a show Friday Night Tailgate, which could have been awesome had they done it right. But you know, they have these shows, and when you're seeing full fans outside before, that's what brings part of the excitement to college football. A full season starting on time, it's what it's about. Well, as of now, Reggie Bush will not, I repeat, not be getting back his 2005 Heisman Trophy. Remember, he gave it up after he and USC were penalized for, it's Sue from New Mexico. That's who Sue One is. Sue from New Mexico. She's in the chat room and on the phone, like T. Bodie. Awesome. Anyway, he's not going to get his Heisman back. The NCAA has determined it will not reverse penalties or previously vacated records just because of rule changes. Now, in Reggie Bush's case, that would be name, image, likeness. Frankly, I can't fault the NCAA's position on this. I mean, it's one of the few decisions they've made. At the time, the rules were clear. Reggie Bush, his family, and USC broke rules. And you also have to understand that that's an advantage. Now, were other people cheating? Maybe. But the point is, you know, both Felicia Goodson and Nikki Britt have talked about it. Players have other worries on their minds. We think of them as just being college kids with a free education. But, you know, kids have worries about things going on at home. Whether mom and dad are rich, poor, whether it's a single mom or a single dad or whatever, you still have worries about what's going on at home. You still worry about your family. Reggie Bush didn't have to worry about his family's financial status. They were literally living rent-free in a million-dollar house. So, yeah, that was an unfair advantage. The player doesn't worry about those things. Anyway, the Heisman Trust, which awards the trophy, had stated earlier this month that should the NCAA reinstate Bush's status relative to that 2005 season, it would return the Heisman to Bush and, quote, welcome him back as a member of the family. Now, let's put it this way. Every former Heisman Trophy winner is a Heisman voter. Every former Heisman Trophy winner is a part of the award process, including the dinner and the presentation. Are all the other former winners clean and pure? Absolutely not. Then again, O.J. Simpson hasn't had his Heisman recognition pulled. And despite annually making a fool of himself at the dinner, Billy Sims is still showing up. Although his 1979 Sports Illustrated interview might be a better reason to pull his Heisman anyway than his merely showing up and yelling, Boomer Sooner. Anybody remember that with Sam Bradford? It was, oh, it's just, he shows up every year and he's just obnoxious. In NFL saying he mulled retirement, Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers instead is returning for his 17th season. He says he wants more personnel say and that he never wanted anyone in the Green Bay front office to be fired. He did skip their June minicamp, and he skipped the entire offseason program, so he forfeited about $500,000 in workout bonuses. Still, details are being worked out on his contract. Packers management is confident he is all in for 2021. As GM Brian Gutekunst put it, he said, "I don't think I've ever seen him be there, go out on the field, and not be all in." I mean, he's basically saying he's a professional once he's here. We'll see how 2021 goes for the Packers, but I know it's never smart to call to count Aaron Rodgers out, barring injury. I mean, he's just too good. Baltimore Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson has tested positive for COVID for the second time, and he's missed the first practice of Ravens training camp. It's the second time that Jackson has tested positive in the last 8 months. And we'll talk about John Rahm earlier. Jackson reported last Thursday he tested negative for 5 straight days before testing positive yesterday. Now, he is required to be tested because he has not been vaccinated. Why he needs to be vaccinated is kind of a mystery, given that he's already had it, but then he has it again. The Ravens reportedly are at a 90% vax rate, by the way. It has to make one wonder, though. Are any of the vaxxed players positive? Think about it this way. You get a vaccine, and they can still manipulate you with it's not foolproof, there's no guarantee, or they can dangle the, well, it might be problems. You know, they can throw that so that you're suddenly thinking, maybe I better keep wearing a mask. Yet they don't require you to be tested. Why? Why? Why are they not, if vaccinated people can get it, remember breakthrough cases? And if people that have had it before can get it again, why are we not testing those that are already vaccinated? I mean, in terms of like at colleges and college football this year, if you're not vaccinated, you're going to be tested rigorously. If you're vaccinated, you won't. But we know people that have had it before, people that have had vaccinations can get it again. So why aren't they being tested then? Are they assuming that unvaccinated people only get it from other unvaccinated people? I ask that because of the other side of their collective mouth. We hear about, as I said, breakthrough cases or transmission can still be done by vaxxed people to unvaccinated people, et cetera. So again, why no test if you're vaccinated? But better, why are people that have been vaccinated showing up as positive? Why are so many of them dying? Now, some of that, I think, has got to be number. I mean, if we looked at numbers, my guess is they would not be much different from other vaccines in terms of deaths from the vaccine. I mean, you know, it always happens. A woman that used to work with my father years ago, in the span of a week, had her son die of cancer, and then her daughter went in for a chickenpox vaccine. They gave her the vaccine, and she slumped over right there in the doctor's office and died. I know, funds day, Wednesday for Hank. No, I'm just making a point that the vaccine, that's always been a case. It's always been possible. I mean, the vaccine doesn't mean that you won't have adverse reactions or that nothing will ever happen. Flu vaccines, as we know, flu vaccines don't prevent the flu. That's never been the way they were designed. It was designed because they needed a way to minimize the effects. Now, I'm not a doctor. I watch, like I said, I've watched a lot of medical dramas on TV. But something's weird. But at the same time, a lot of it, I think, is media sensationalizing it. Simple as that. They make it sound like, oh, my God, look what's happening. I mean, you know, the media is shaming people for not getting vaccinated, but then in the same token, they're running these stories about people dying from the vaccinations or people getting it after being vaccinated. So someone's got their communication mixed up. Daily News says because the PCR test was never appropriate for detecting COV2. And again, I'm not a doctor. I don't know. I will believe that. I mean, somebody that says that, it's perfectly reasonable to believe that. I don't know it for fact in the sense that I'm not an expert on it. All I know is it screwed up football season last year, and it screwed up last spring's basketball March Madness. Let's get to some politics news. Plastic Pelosi, the choice for staff director of her January 6th faux investigation into the events at Capitol Hill that day, has a bit of history, as in not a stellar history. Former CIA Inspector General David Buckley, Yahoo News, yes, that Yahoo News, 2019, that DHS watchdog office had urged the CIA to take action against Buckley for alleged retaliation against a whistleblower. Now, DHS's investigation concluded Buckley's investigation of the whistleblower was tainted and motivated by retaliation. Ooh, interesting. Daily News said the man who invented the PCR test said so and then died sometime last year. Arkansas? Do you mean Arkansas Daily News? T. Bodie's mentioning, he's strange how he just got over severe COVID, and yet his doctor says he should still get the unapproved vaccine in 4 to 6 weeks. See, folks? Anyway, here's an excerpt from the article that says it all about this Buckley investigation. The Democratic leadership's move to hire Buckley, despite DHS's conclusions, has enraged CIA Inspector General officials familiar with Buckley's tenure, as well as experts on whistleblower protections, who, as a result, are casting doubt on the legitimacy of the Select Committee's investigation, and we will talk about that later. In other words, the vindictive bastard who worked under Obama is still, like his then boss, a petty, vindictive, and dangerous person who has no business serving in any capacity that requires actual, factual investigation motives. I'm going to pull up the article. I mean, I've looked through it before, and I'm actually going to pull it up. They recommended the security clearance, pulling the security clearance of Buckley and several other investigation officials. It's unclear, they said, whether the CIA heeded the report's recommendations. The target of Buckley's retaliation was a former CIA Inspector General official who has yet to receive any remedy for these things. Basically what happened, Buckley was called out, and at that point he made life tough for the whistleblower. And what they worry about here, what other big left supporters worry about, is that look, this taints this whole process, committee director, the staff director of the committee. So, yeah. Already that investigation or that process, sham as we already know it to be, is now even made shammier, if you will. Okay, now next up. We're into COVID-19 to the tune of trillions at this point. Between the multiple stimulus bills, extended unemployment benefits, the overall economic impact. It's not going to surprise me if the impact hits $10 trillion when all is said and done. And that's just in the U.S. So what comes next? Well, according to Dr. Fauci, we need to spend, quote, a few billion dollars a year, unquote, to make prototype vaccines in anticipation of the next pandemic. Seriously, man, this guy has no, absolutely no shame, no remorse, and no problem bilking all of us under the guise of research and prevention. Meanwhile, he couldn't tell us we needed to wear masks a day or two before the WHO declared COVID-19 a pandemic. If you remember, as late as March 10th, he said Americans do not need to alter their behavior. Yeah, he says, in one sense, the world got lucky. Really? His idea, anyway, is to make prototype vaccines to protect against viruses from about 20 families that might spark a new pandemic. If we get the funding, which I believe we will, it will likely start in 2022, Fauci said, adding that he has been promoting the idea in discussions with the White House and others. as we begin to contemplate a successful end of the COVID-19 pandemic, whoa, I thought we were having all kinds of new cases. I thought kids couldn't go back to school again without masks. But evidently Fauci's institute isn't pulling enough weight, so they want Congress to give them more. Here's what it says. If surveillance networks detected a new virus spilling over from animals into people, so the logic goes, scientists could stop it by immunizing people in the outbreak by quickly manufacturing the prototype vaccine. And if the virus spread before the world realized what was happening, the prototype vaccines could be deployed more widely. What? What? Before the world realized what was happening, the prototype vaccines could be deployed more widely. Something is not right here. Something is not right. The prototype vaccines project is the brainchild of one Dr. Barney Graham. I mean, you know, this thing hasn't killed nearly as many as like Ebola and SARS and MERS and yet, or H1N1. And yet, I don't know, something's wrong here. One guy says, for each virus family, we're in a different state of knowledge and vaccine development. Again, I get it. Okay. They know from certain things can happen. But I don't even get what this is. This an attempt to still throw it back on bats in the wet market? Is this a deflector? It's not making any sense, that's for sure. If you remember hearing Dr. Charles Lieber from Harvard, who did not disclose his ties to the Wuhan Institute or Wuhan University of Technology and virology. And remember, Ivy League, first to pull their basketball tournament last year, first to shut their stuff down, their sports down. They circled the wagons. That's what they did. It's just, it's frightening in a way. And here's Fauci saying, this is what pandemic preparedness can do 2 days before WHO declared it a pandemic. 2 days before, this guy said, Americans didn't need to alter their behavior. Remember, Nancy Pelosi, come on down to Chinatown. We're partying and the water is fine. Remember Chucky Schumer. Chinese travel ban is reactionary, xenophobic, and racist. But now they're ready to grant this guy all kinds of money, or he's hoping they're ready to grant him all kinds of money. That's a serious problem. By the way, as I said, the January 6th commission, riot commission, met yesterday. There are two Republicans on the committee, Wyoming's Liz Cheney and Illinois' Adam Kinzinger, who coincidentally both voted to put forth the impeachment of President Trump. Jim Jordan, and I forgot the other guy's name, Jim Jordan was rejected. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy had put up those two, and they were rejected by Pelosi, and then she said she would handpick her own. They pulled all the Republicans off the committee, McCarthy did. Pelosi appointed Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger. So what happened? Well, we had Capitol Hill police officers actually saying things like it was worse than any war. We had officers saying it was worse than 9/11. And then we had actual outright lies, such as the one officer saying an officer was killed in the incursion. Now, it's already been established that Brian Sicknick was not injured during the incursion, nor that his death was a result of injuries during the incursion. He died of a stroke. In other words, we have at least one Capitol Hill police officer lying to a congressional panel. Now, that's bad enough. But when we have these people, including committee members like Adam Schiff for brains, tearing up and crying during this meeting. I can only say this, gross. Seriously, I mean, where is this faux fear fest, faux tear fest coming from? And do any of these people have the balls or the moxie to just suck it up and go proceed through the committee? At what point does any one of these people look in a mirror and say, oh my God, I have totally sacrificed my dignity. And for what? I mean, I only saw the highlights. And frankly, I cannot watch anymore. I mean, seriously, why in blue blazes is Adam Schiff crying during this? And as Indy Hawk pointed out, why were requests for additional security rejected? Not once, not twice, but four times in advance of January 6th. Pelosi and Capitol Hill Police both rejected calls for increased security. But why is Adam Schiff crying? And I like how the cameras would slowly pan to each and every committee member in deep thought or maudlin or glum or crying. As I said, they were fake crying, but nonetheless, they were yucking it up for the camera. Yeah, T. Bodie points out, where's the hours of videotape? I'll bet you they don't even look at this videotape. Daily News points out, by the way, Delta variant is being sold as if it were just as deadly as COVID. It may be more contagious, i.e. more transmissible, but it is not more deadly. It is, in fact, less deadly. Facts. He's right. Look at the numbers. You know, now they're selling us on number of cases. They're trying to sell us on number of hospitalizations. But again, too many people haven't played along. Too many hospital systems have said, yeah, we're full, but not with COVID. So now it's look at total number of positive tests. It's not look at number of deaths, just positive tests. Now, T. Bodie had a sort of a built, we talked about a built-in immunity from our college days. Folks, swallowed wrong. He had a built-in immunity. Lots of alcohol, lots of hanging with lots of unsavory characters in Iowa City. We all sort of got a built-in immunity, but that's not the point. The point is this thing seems to be more transmissible, but is causing less deaths. The death rate is dropping from it. Why is that? And yet we're hearing about pockets of this and outbreaks of that. I'll tell you why a little later. This didn't take long, by the way. Almost as soon as CDC guidelines didn't fit the narrative of Big Left, CDC Director Rochelle Walensky spewed forth with this statement while on a TV interview when she was asked whether or not the U.S. would go to a European-style health pass type of system for bars and restaurants and other venues. This is what she said. That may very well be a path forward. Here's what's happened. In the span of a month, we have gone from things are normalizing, inflation is temporary, to unvaccinated people are the problem, to we need to go back to masks for indoors, to kids must be masked if they want to go back to school, and now to vax passports or health passes being a path forward. By the way, this is going to kill minority communities. Remember, alleged Vice President Kamala Harris told us that the reason minorities couldn't get IDs for voting purposes was because they don't have a local Kinko's to get copies or lamination. Now, she said that, folks, not me. Not anybody here on Global Patriot Radio. Alleged Vice President Kamala Harris said it. Said, there's no local Kinko's for them to get copies or to get laminated cards. She actually said that. Yesterday, La Dopey Nostra, they unveiled a 21-point plan to process asylum claims more quickly, which could allow asylum seekers to bypass immigration courts or quickly deport those who don't qualify. Here is suggestion number one from yours truly. Deport anyone and everyone who is seeking asylum that isn't from Mexico, Canada, or Cuba, or isn't here on a visa of some type with a group. like the Russian ballet or whatever. Anyone else, by definition, is not eligible to seek asylum. And no, that's not some heartless U.S. rule. It's a recognized rule by the UN and the World Court that when seeking asylum, you seek asylum in a neighboring country. You don't hop six time zones and in a hemisphere asylum. Yes, don't get me wrong. Others can seek refugee status, but claiming asylum is different from refugee status. There is also a fact sheet, by the way, put out by the La Dopi Nostra, included among the plan. Asylum officers could rule on status. It could provide families with legal counsel, provided, of course, Congress approves $15 million as part of Dopey Joe's budget proposal for next year. And, of course, hiring more immigration judges. Here's the kicker statement, though. Success in building this fair, orderly, and humane immigration system won't be achieved overnight, especially after the prior administration's irrational and inhumane policies. But this administration has a blueprint to get there and is making real progress. We will also always be a nation of borders, and we will enforce our immigration laws in a way that is fair and just. Folks, I can sum up this criteria in one word: votes. Okay, I can sum it up in two words: Democrat votes. People, they put this garbage in the fact sheet. Now, let's see some other phrases bandied about in this quote-unquote fact sheet. It says, the administration has accomplished this alleged fair and orderly process while reckoning with the prior administration's cruel and reckless immigration policies. Have you ever heard of an administration doing that, throwing a former administration under the bus like that? Then it says, the previous administration failed to securely manage our border. Yep, it says that. I reiterate. It says La Dopi Nostra, quote, accomplished something with regard to the border. It says that right there in the third full paragraph. All this after telling Cubans, you better not come here illegally, and all but ignoring the events taking place there. Remember, Dopey Joe was VP during Operation Fast and Furious, another unsavory assorted crap that went on during that administration. This guy sat by while MS-13 and other Latin American gangs trafficked drugs, weapons, and people into this country illegally. Guy then has the unmitigated gall to tell Cubans not to come here illegally. Friggin' racist, bigoted jackwagon. What is it in his deeply racist soul that makes him assume that any Cubans that are coming here, by the way, are coming here quote-unquote illegally? Little slip of the tongue. Famous phrase, if not for double standards, Big Left would have no standards. DOJ has decreed that COVID-19 vax mandates are legal in light of opposition that has been given to mandate issued by the VA. Comrade Kaiser Wilhelm de Blasio, mayor of New York, decreed this. He said, quote, public sector entities need to move as quickly as possible. This DOJ decision is important. I think it will be helpful. We have got to put pressure on this situation. Good God, they're not even trying to hide it at this point. They're not even trying. Here are a few more tidbits. Okay. On July 26th, Department of Veterans Affairs said they would require some of their workers to get the COVID-19 shot or be tested weekly. So Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel wrote that because access to COVID-19 vaccines is more commonplace, numerous educational institutions, employers, and other entities across the United States have said they will require some individuals to be vaccinated. For instance, certain schools will require vaccination in order for students to attend class in person. The opinion noted that some have questioned the legality of such mandates, but they conclude that federal law concerning the FDA's emergency use authorization vaccines doesn't prohibit public or private entities from imposing vaccine requirements, even when the only vaccines available are those authorized under emergency use authorization. Rutgers became the first university to mandate them, by the way, for students and employees. Carnegie Hall in Manhattan announced that it will require audience members, staff, and performers to provide proof before entering the building. There have been big demonstrations across Europe, France mainly. Daily News points out Joe Biden doesn't know what he's saying. That's a fact. Remember back in the old days when Congress would make a law and then the laws might be challenged and then it would go through the courts and the courts would make the ultimate determination? Yeah, not under Dopey Nostra's version of the Department of Justice. Seriously, this is the Orwellian nightmare we all feared. Worse, it's what we never thought could actually happen. Now, on to some election stuff. The Arizona Senate has issued new subpoenas for Maricopa County. This could get good, or it could just get swept under the rug. Basically, what's happened, they've issued new subpoenas to Maricopa County judges, or election judges, not judges, but election supervisors. They've issued them to turn over ballot envelopes, ballot images, voter records, and router or router images. Dominion has also been subpoenaed. Dominion says they are not going to comply because it seeks administrative passwords for the machines. Duh. County officials themselves refuse to provide some of the subpoenaed items, despite a judge ruling that those subpoenas are lawful. Security risk. This could get good, like I said, or it could just get swept under the rug. As I've said, and as I continue to maintain, Donald Trump is not going to back to the White House anytime before January 20th, 2025. Even if the election results were to get reversed, they will not get overturned. There's a difference between, you know, saying what happened and actually overturning the election. Daily News points out Britney Spears is declared mentally unfit to handle her affairs. Joe Biden declared leader of the free world. The courts, especially the Supreme Court, don't have the fortitude or frankly the integrity to overturn it. And I still believe President Trump would be a fool to want to go back before La Dopey Nostra completes its term if, and this is not really far-fetched, La Dopey Nostra goes far enough to threaten or piss off the military rank and file, the right military leaders, state governors, and congressional types. That is when La Dopey Nostra would be removed. But even then, it does not default to Donald J. Trump. That will only happen with a congressional push and validation by the judiciary. It won't happen any other way. But don't think for one second that this renewed COVID hysteria isn't being fully utilized in order to continue the idea of COVID-relaxed election scenarios. I mean, if you really believe, even for a minute, that this isn't part of their MO, you will be in for a rude awakening in November of 2022. Again, this comes down to the states and municipalities enacting and enforcing sensible election procedures called for from the day after the election. They're called on to eliminate faulty and rigged election scenarios and make sure proper steps and procedures are taken. Big Left, though, will use whatever they can to try and mitigate or eliminate such steps. Look, H.R. 1 isn't being attempted in a vacuum. Attempts to eliminate the filibuster aren't just to provide expedited legislative processes. All this is to eliminate any form of opposition, resistance, and constitutional safeguards. Look, in the end, the only way not to violate the Constitution in their world is to eliminate it. They love to say it's a fluid document, but to them it shouldn't exist if it tempers their lust for power and control. By the way, if you think La Dopi Nostra and other Beltway types aren't worried about these election audits, think again. Department of Justice is threatening states where audits are taking place. They're already saying that there are violations of federal law. They haven't done anything, but they're saying there could be violations of federal law. You know, the old Nikita Khrushchev idea, we will bury you. Department of Justice has alerted these states via guidance documents that basically contained thinly veiled threats of going after them on civil rights violations and election tampering. Now that is rich. La Dopi Nostra's NOJ talking about election tampering. Look, the fact remains, they are on thin ice. If the audits turn up conclusive evidence, Department of Justice and La Dopi Nostra not only look really foolish, they appear as being what they are, obstructionist. Remember, the same big left that is fighting election audits wanted to conduct them for the 2016 election, right up until the next election took place. And when that failed, it was on to impeachment. When that failed, they started grasping at anything and everything, from bogus star witnesses and complainants like Christine Blasey Ford, Stormy Daniels, Michael Avenatti, Michael Cohen, and anyone else with a pulse. Look, the January 6th commission is just an extension of all that. One would think that they would be of an attitude that shows like, hey, we won, it's over. But the fact is they know. Deep down, they know they don't belong in Washington, D.C. They know they don't belong in the leadership of a bicameral democracy, never mind the leadership of a constitutional republic, which was the original founding of this country. And they know that with the way information travels, people aren't going to put up with it much longer. Their window to making people fully dependent on government, their window on encampment of resistors, on staying in power without effort, it's disappearing. And it scares them. It angers them. And most of all, it makes them dangerous. Look, Mark Zuckerberg on his own isn't dangerous. But a vengeful Mark Zuckerberg, getting back at everyone who ever bullied him when he was a baby and a kid, that kind of a vengeful Mark Zuckerberg is dangerous. Barack Obama wasn't dangerous in and of himself, but a power-thirsty Barack Obama, oh, most definitely. Nancy Pelosi, same thing. She's dangerous by herself. But again, a matriarchal, power-hungry Nancy Pelosi most certainly is dangerous. Disregard law and procedure and ethics just to prove a point. Yes, these people are the epitome of the word dangerous. Very much, very much. Going to take a quick break, refill on the water. So I'm going to play you guys a song, but it's not going to be a sleepy song. Let's make it something. Let's make it something that you guys can dance to. Here we go. A little Jimi Hendrix Experience. We'll be right back. the Jimi Hendrix Experience with She's So Fine, not dedicated to Nancy Pelosi. Now, someone's going to say, that didn't sound like Hendrix. It didn't, because that's not Jimi Hendrix singing. That was Noel Redding, one of his turns at the mic. That was Jimmy playing, though, no doubt. Let's get on to some poly sports. Minnesota Vikings assistant coach Rick Dennison is out after refusing the vaccine. The league mandated that all Tier 1 staff be vaccinated or have valid exemption, which Rick Dennison apparently doesn't have. Another NFL assistant, Cole Popovich of New England Patriots, also won't be with the team this year over vaccination issues. Now, Tier 1 staff includes coaches, front office executives, equipment managers, and scouts. Interestingly, most likely because of pushback from the NFL Players Association, players are not required to be vaccinated, but of course will undergo strict protocols that vaccinated players will not be required to observe, such as mask wearing, ongoing testing, possible travel quarantines. You know, we had just from the very beginning, had we just from the very beginning stopped the lockdowns after 30 days and planned it that way, this would all be behind us. We would have reached herd immunity faster, obviously. We also could have used that 30 days to aggressively research and publicize prophylaxis and treatment alternatives until a vaccine was achieved. Now, we've had this occur in waves, with some states experiencing various surges at various times. The bigger problem, we've allowed media, big left, and politics in general to drive this narrative. We've allowed an intrusive government to shut us down, give us palliative half measures to keep us happy, and we allow ourselves to be shocked when these corrupt, larcenous, self-serving jackwagons tell us we owe them and ought to be grateful for how they have manipulated us under the guise of shepherding us to some diverse, inclusive, dystopian Valhalla. We don't really know the long-term effects of the vaccine. We don't. I get it. I suspect it's neither as bad nor as harmless as either side promotes. I do know this. Using a vaccine or any other health care or any government handout of our own tax dollars as a political weapon is a lunacy we shouldn't even be discussing, except like on a fictional TV show or big screen film. The idea that a president of the United States could say some of the things he has said recently, whether it's things like Republicans are killing people, Facebook's killing people, or people owing the government for its magnanimous gift of our own tax dollars, none of us can afford these tax dollars. And then having a complicit media out there running interference, it's unfathomable. And yet here we are. Look, Major League Baseball and the NFL both enjoy exemption from antitrust statutes. Now, when it suits them, various governmental scumbags will raise the specter of withdrawing that exemption, the way they hold it over churches. They always hold that tax exemption over churches' heads. And before you know it, mainstream clergy are touting government. But look, they're holding it over the heads of the league owners. The sleazier congressional types will go even further. They threaten the NCAA. They threaten colleges. Even fans, frankly, with the idea that college sports is a form of slavery. Then they tell us we need to forgive student debt. It really boils down to this, though. Someone in this country needs not only to acquire a set of cojones, but to actually display them. Colleges can fight back. Hell, most of the ones under threat of revenue sharing, they're public anyway. They have a perfect out. With Title IX, by the way. People are saying Title IX sucks, but you know, NIL is a perfect response to Title IX. Easily be able to show that they're not paying it. But they would also be able to show under Title IX that paying all the athletes on top of scholarships for tuition, room and board, books, lab fees, activity fees, and whatever other fees colleges will add, since we, the government funders, are blindly paying for it anyway, they're easily going to be able to show it's unsustainable. Paying football players from football dollars at schools isn't an issue, at least among Power 5 schools. Okay, we may be fast heading toward Power 4 now, with the apparently imminent demise of the Big 12. That's just a detail. The point being this, football pays for itself at the college level. But that's not what sleazy Congress types want. They want football, and in some cases basketball, to pay for female athletes, for loss leader sport athletes, in other words, basket weaving, boat rowing, whatever. Won't be long till they want football to pay for transgender athletes, for intramural athletes, non-athletes, oppressed students, marginal students, and for anything else. Why? Well, simple. People are willing to pay for football. Hell, back when it was expensive, I paid $25 or $50 a year to get an Iowa student ticket back in the 1980s. Today, man, people gladly pay for club seating. People gladly buy $12 beers, parking passes, to the tune of like $3,000 to $5,000 to $10,000 or more a year for those privileges. Simple. It's a product that sells. And it sells big. You think if there wasn't a bunch of free student loan money that colleges would keep raising costs, that college would cost what it does? Hell no, it wouldn't. Somebody's got to pay for it, so it may as well be us, right? The fact that grown men and women working in a professional sports league are forced to vax or else is mind-boggling. The fact that we let last year state governors forbid college football without every player being vaxed was borderline criminal. But you want to know what's worse, and probably worst? We allow it. We buy the Big Ten network package. We buy the ESPN Plus. We buy cable. We buy satellite. And then we fool ourselves when we buy streaming and say, hey, I cut the cord. We fool ourselves when we say, I don't watch that reality TV, or I don't watch this hours every day on our phones or our computers or our social networks. And we fool ourselves when we say, vote the bastards out every election cycle. And then we're incredulous when they get reelected. It's going to take real balls, real guts, and real fortitude. It might mean that you stop buying on Amazon. It might mean that you stop buying Ben & Jerry's. Stop buying from big box stores, Walmart, Target, Home Depot, Bass Pro Shop, some of my favorite places, by the way. It may even mean growing our own food, getting with your neighbor and going in and splitting a cow or a pig and cramming whatever you can into your freezer. At least you buy it from an actual farmer and not some conglomerate whose main claim to fame or main qualification is that they have a good enough machine to print out USD labels and slap it on whatever it is they call beef. Not to mention the fact our meat production is fast being taken over by Chinese companies. Whatever it takes, this has to stop. Look, I'm under no illusion. This is an NFL coach who probably gets paid $500,000 or more per year just for coaching football. And frankly, he knew the vaccine rules. But he has the balls. He won't get the vaccination if he's not comfortable with it. Yes, he is paying the price. But people, that's what it's going to take. It is past time for us to stand up, stand firmly on the ground and say, enough. No more. Not now, not ever. No more. Call your elected officials. When they don't listen, call them again. Go to their offices. Their local offices, their D.C. offices have barricades around them. Go to your neighbors. Tell them what you think. Tell them this needs to stop. We got to dump this clown. Hold your officials accountable constantly. Hold your media accountable. And they continue to stay above the fray and speak out. Just speak out. Laugh at them. Hold their personal agenda up to the light for everyone to see. Hold your neighbors accountable. The guy with the Biden sign, ignore him. When he starts to infringe on your rights, and they make no mistake, he will. It's what they do. Call him out. Don't let him get away with it. Don't allow some boorish, self-centered leftist to tell you that you're selfish or that he deserves what he wants, but you don't because you don't support socialism or communism or progressive bilge and crap that glorifies rooting, looting, and marching to the point of interfering with the rights of others. Don't ever allow anyone to tell you that throwing a brick through the window of a business, any business, is justified by somebody that got killed 500 or 1,000 miles away from where you are. Don't allow anyone to tell your kids they are inherently racist or inherently better or inherently worse or inherently anything. And especially, don't allow one single soul to teach your kids and tell them something in a classroom that they don't want those kids to share with you at home. And for God's sake, don't put up with an administrator or a teacher who will march for critical this or critical that, but won't go back to school because their union boss tells them it's not safe. These same people are posting on social media with their margarita parties and their beach excursions and their protest videos. Do it anymore. Look, support your law enforcement officers. Hold them accountable. For instance, never put up with a police chief or a sheriff who kneels in solidarity with the people because it's politically expedient. Remind them, it's not your job to kneel. It's your job to uphold the law and protect the community. Ask them how they'd feel if somebody decided to kneel at the funeral of the next law enforcement officer who's murdered by some lowlife. Okay, I mentioned earlier in the show that Simone Biles dropped out of the team competition for the U.S. women's gymnastics team. She had a lot of support from fans and other gymnasts. It wasn't an injury. It was just stress and not being in the right frame of mind, apparently. And frankly, when she performed her initial vault, she shorted the move from 2.5 to 1.5 twists. She had a rough landing. She later said there were several elements of stress, including empty stands. And believe it or not, I actually kind of get that. Frankly, don't be shocked when a LaJuan James or any of today's generations of players walk off a court midfield or a field mid-game. I mentioned this early, but it would have been inconceivable 20 years ago. It's inconceivable back then that Mary Lou Retton or Carrie Strug or any of a dozen previous U.S. Olympic gymnasts would have done this. But this is now. So let's review a few things. The 1996 Olympics, where we saw Carrie Strug do the rotations and landings on a severely sprained ankle, really featured other gymnasts, or amateur gymnasts for the most part. Sure, they got some promotional money, some appearance money, but they really didn't cash in until their post-Olympic career. Carl Lewis and Edwin Moses and other track athletes got appearance fees to show up at certain meets, but it was limited, it was defined, it was strictly enforced. Former world record holder in the 100-meter hurdles, Ronaldo Nehemiah, was robbed of an almost certain gold medal by our boycott in 1980. He certainly would have been a favorite to win in the LA Olympics in 1984, but he gave up his track career to play wide receiver for the 49ers. He didn't do it because he excelled in football. He ran track at Maryland. He was dominant for a couple of years, but he couldn't make any money. He couldn't get his own appearance money. He couldn't get his own endorsement money. Today, our Olympians, at least in the high-profile sports, get everything, stipend, salary, endorsement, performance rewards. Not to mention the publicity that they can parlay into a Wheaties commercial. When Olympians of the pre-2000s did Wheaties commercials, it was because their Olympic career was over. You didn't see Ronaldo Nehemiah quit. Let me tell you one story. Derek Redman, he was the British record holder in the 400 meters. At the 1992 Games in Barcelona, he pulled up with a pulled hamstring. Stretcher bearers came out. He got up. He waved them off. He got up and just kept running, limping. His dad came out and busted through security, came out to help him. Now, technically, that got him disqualified. But he already knew from having to withdraw from a previous Olympics, he knew one thing, that no Olympic berth, no Olympic win is ever guaranteed. Just finishing that race may be all he would ever have. So, yeah, watch him. Watch Dan Jansen. Watch when I talk about Drew Tate. Watch Don Beebe, the Buffalo Bills. It wasn't about headspace. It wasn't about emotional support. As I said earlier, this isn't a rant about Simone Biles. Okay, it is, however. It's a rant about a system that allows an athlete to quit and then lionizing or sanctifying that athlete. Look, sports is getting more broken all the time. It's getting more woke all the time. Why? Because sports and politics are getting more commingled all the time. There was a 2005 movie called Sweetland, and one character, a Norwegian immigrant farmer in Minnesota, is constantly enticed to borrow money by a local greedy banker. The farmer's name is Olaf Torvik, and each time he has an answer, he says in a very heavy Norwegian-tinged accent, "Banking and farming don't mix." In much that same vein, it's becoming apparent that sports and politics, or politics and sports, don't mix, at least in a way that could be called complementary. It's getting sad. Hey, I got a call I want to take. I'm going to bring in this person. Good afternoon. Welcome to Hank Jones Polysports. What's your name?
Yeah, my name is Hunter.
What's up, Hunter? What's on your mind?
I agree what you were saying about sports and politics. And why is it always in liberal politics?
It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I suspect it's because it's a power grab and a money grab.
How so?
There's a lot of money in college sports right now. I mean, Big Ten teams are getting $70 million a year all of a sudden from TV contracts. Guess what? They want at it. You know, I mean, if it's your money, they want at it. It's simple as that. That itself is not a mystery.
So you think they just do the liberal thing because the people who run TV shows are liberal?
Oh, I don't know that it's because of that. It's that certain liberals see the money that is made in college sports now. So the natural reaction is, how do we get that? How do we neutralize these people? You know, what does money build? Money builds power. Well, gosh, if colleges aren't dependent on their government, if colleges can negotiate this stuff on their own without some lawyer or union lawyer for the players, boy, how useful is a congressman 20 years from now? He's no longer holding the purse strings over a University of Iowa or a University of North Carolina.
Yeah. No, I agree. No, I agree with you. I just wanted to mention that. You know, I just see a lot of the liberal politics surrounding me, and I just wondered when it came to sports. And most liberals don't even like sports, too. I mean, I don't get it.
Well, you're seeing some of the liberal athletes, though, former athletes, Cory Booker, Tom McMillan, when he was in Congress, was sort of an advocate for it. I think it's really this. Some of them, it's probably out of guilt. Cory Booker was never poor. Cory Booker went to Stanford. I mean, you know. But on the other hand, again, what do they crave? What do liberals really crave? And that is power. And somebody that is empowered separately and apart from them is not something that they feel comfortable with. You know, they fear loss of power more than anything. Their lust for power is unmatched. Which isn't to say that there aren't conservatives that also lust for power, but no, not on the level that you're seeing now from the left.
Yeah. And that's interesting. I didn't know Cory Booker went. I thought he went to Princeton. I didn't realize he went to Stanford. Anyway, he did. Okay. One other question is, can you lick your own asshole? I was wondering that listening to you. Is that something you could?
And there goes Hunter. Hunter was fine up until that point, but that was nasty. So, hey, folks, guess what? We're up against 7 o'clock. So that means it's time to send you out with a song. But I want to thank Daily News, Indy Hawk, T. Bodie, Sue, and Annie. Southern Sense came in late and joined in the fun. And I saw another number on there that might have been hers. I don't know. I don't know her. She's never called in, so I don't know. But it could have been her, Annie. But thank you all for being here. Thanks, T. Bodie, Sue, as I mentioned. Big Sister was here. There's a couple other numbers I saw for a bit, in addition to Hunter and his call. That was kind of nasty. But, hey, have a good week. Be safe out there. Hey, track and field in the Olympics. This Friday is when we find our first finals, medals. That's when the Olympics really counts in my mind, because it's basically you know who wins. There's no judging. There's no rating. You know who wins. Now, I know you know in swimming, but you can't see them in swimming. They're underwater half the time, so you can't see them. Running, you see it. So, hey, let's send off Dusty Hill again the last few moments of our show. Folks, have a great week. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next week.